not free. I must thank you again for being here on time, for showing your interest consistently as you did yesterday. We are supposed to start with immediate effect. I've already seen the embrace dignity. I'm told that there's a slight change. Human Rights Commission will follow them. There has been a reorganization. Embrace dignity. The platform is yours. You know, you don't go beyond 20. The far less than 20 you go, the better, so that you've got enough time to sell your message to the community. And the best way to sell your message is keeping more time for that engagement. Over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the public, fellow South Africans. My name is Nozizwe Mashala Routledge. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nozizwe Mashala Routledge, and I'm really proud to come back to this institution that is our institution that we brought about. And I'm also proud to be sharing this presentation with a former member of the House, now the Deputy Chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission, Ms. Prex Govender. I'm here representing Embrace Dignity. I'm here with a delegation that is sitting with me, behind me, the women on whose behalf we are going to be speaking this morning. And I will introduce them later. Embrace Dignity is a South African NGO established to advocate for laws that affirm the democratic values of human dignity, equality, and freedom of women, and that protect their rights in the Bill of Rights. And the slides are over there, honorable members, for you to follow as I speak. In particular, it is established to protect women from trafficking and sexual exploitation. It is our view that the proposed bill has much to offer when it comes to combating the harms of trafficking, including how trafficking is defined. So we're here in support of the bill, and we're very proud of this bill because we think it takes the Palermo declaration to which our country is party, and it makes it into domestic law that we can be proud of. We're very pleased to note that debt bondage has been stipulated as a means of trafficking, and that consent is not a defense where the prohibited means of trafficking have been used. We further welcome the opportunity to make comments on certain aspects of the bill after briefly introducing two of our partners in addition to the South African Council of Churches, and they are behind me, and they'll be saying a few words in support of our submission. The South African Council of Churches has come in full support behind Embrace Dignity in our campaign. Embrace Dignity is affiliated to the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, and we are very proud to have present supporting our submission this morning a board member of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, Ms. Ruchira Gupta, sitting over there from India, and she's here to share her experience from India, where she has established an organization of 10,000 women who were trafficked, who are now standing up and speaking for themselves. The Coalition Against Trafficking in Women is creating real and lasting changes in countries around the world by launching and supporting anti-trafficking projects in areas that few programs address. And these areas are the link between prostitution and trafficking, because there is a link, and I wish that members of parliament look into this link between trafficking and prostitution, because that's what drives trafficking in our view, in terms of the large numbers who are trafficked, who are women in the main and girls. So the CATW also challenges the demand for prostitution that promotes sex trafficking. And it works to protect women and children who are victims by working to curb legal acceptance and tolerance of the sex industry. I said earlier I'm here supported by the very women on whose behalf we are speaking. Embrace Dignity has established Masipaga Meni, and those who speak Nguni will know what Masipaga Meni means. It's a survivor-led organization of women who have been trafficked and prostituted, who are finding their voice through support and whose scars we all carry. And this includes you, honorable members, you carry their scars. Masipaga Meni have met with the Ministry of Women and are demanding accountability from you, the elected representatives, and from those who abuse and profit and take away their dignity. Masipaga Meni means let us stand up. You will remember, those of you who are in the women's movement, that this was a very important call to women. Women, arise. Let us stand up, because there's nobody else to free us but ourselves. So coming to the bill in front of us, in addition to push factors in the preamble, such as poor socioeconomic conditions, the Palermo Protocol identifies the demand as one of the root causes of trafficking in persons. In order to better reflect this, it is suggested that the first paragraph be adjusted to read, recognizing the search for improved socioeconomic circumstances and the demand for trafficked persons for all forms of exploitation, especially for sexual exploitation, are contributing factors making persons vulnerable to becoming victims of trafficking. And continuing on the preamble, we are aware that our constitution, which is our aspirational document, talks about equality, and we are proud of this. But we are also cognizant of the fact that discrimination against women continues. So in this context, we know that the equality and anti-discrimination provisions of the constitution appear to have been omitted from the preamble. In order to better foreground these imperatives, that is, equality and anti-discrimination, which are behind any law on trafficking, it is suggested that the right to equality be included in the fourth paragraph beginning "and since," so that it reads, quote-unquote, enshrines the right to human dignity, equality, the right to freedom. Further, it is proposed that CEDAW, which is the Convention Against All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, be included in the fifth paragraph of the preamble, beginning with "mindful," after the reference to the Palermo Protocol. I now come to definitions, and I think that's very important. And we are proposing a definition that goes like this: abuse of vulnerability. Because vulnerability can exist, but we want the abuse of vulnerability to be included. The terms physical or psychological have been included to qualify the abuse, which leads a person to believe that he or she has no reasonable alternative but to submit to exploitation, and which do not appear in the transitional definition in Section 70B6 of the Sexual Offences Act. It is suggested that the protocol intended abuse of position of vulnerability to refer to the taking advantage of a situation of hardship, a refugee being one example, where a victim feels impelled to submit to the exploitation as opposed to the more direct forms of abuse as described, that is, threat of harm, threat or use of force, intimidation, or other forms of coercion. So we are saying we should put it in this way as abuse of the position of vulnerability rather than talking about physical and psychological abuse, because this may be difficult to prove. Furthermore, it is suggested that 1E should also include a reference to being a woman. Similarly, whether the victim was a woman should be inserted under factors to be considered at sentencing in Chapter 3, Section 11. I think I've already explained that women in particular, although our Constitution defends the Equality Clause, still find that they are discriminated against simply because they were born women. Then I come to quite an important definition of sexual exploitation. The definition is confusing and will be difficult to implement. It isn't clear what elements the state would have to prove in order to secure a conviction. And we are really very serious about this. In order to combat and prevent and punish trafficking, we've got to make it easy for the courts to be able to secure a conviction. It is suggested, therefore, that that section should be altered as follows. Sexual exploitation means the commission of any sexual offences in terms of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, or any offence of a sexual nature in any other law against a victim of trafficking, or the inducement of such a person through the means of trafficking into the production of pornographic material or the performance of any other act of a sexual nature. Continuing on definitions on trafficking, and I'm glad that Honorable Olomisa is here. I'm sure he will understand my point. And I speak here as a Zulu woman, as an African woman. I'm saying that we are suggesting that we include a reference to traditional practices such as ukuthwala, and we are suggesting that we alter that section because it does deal with abduction. We are saying that G should be formulated this way. Abduction. This includes the traditional practice of ukuthwala and other similar practices, because these practices exist in other cultures as well. They exist in other religious formations, but in actual fact, we are saying allowing this to happen actually undermines the dignity of women, and we are going to give an explanation later on. And then Chapter 4 deals with identification and protection of victims of trafficking. And we are very concerned that in the section dealing with reporting and referral of adult victims of trafficking, there's a certain conditionality that has been put there, or the exclusion of some of the officials in the social services. It is not clear why the social service and medical service providers should be barred from reporting suspected trafficking matters to a police official unless written permission has been obtained from the victim, apart from the exceptional circumstances contained in 1 and 2. So I contend that according to this provision, they are not being permitted to report unless there is a written statement from the victim. There are many circumstances where obtaining a written statement from a victim might not be possible. I'll use the issue of language for one. The victim might not speak the languages of this country. The victim might be dead for that matter and not able to say, this is what happened to me, but trafficking has happened. The victim might be unable to speak on any of our languages, or might be illiterate, or might be accompanied by the controllers, traffickers, and not be able to say or sign anything. He or she might simply be too intimidated or afraid, or not able to trust the service provider sufficiently that the statement would not be passed on to the traffickers. The provisions will simply place obstacles in the way of those able to assist and potentially allow the continuation of the abuse of the victims while there was a possibility of rendering assistance and arresting the traffickers. I continue in this, and I say victims of trafficking suffer immense harm due to the involvement of organized criminal networks and inability of victims to come forward. Incidents of trafficking are very difficult to detect and prosecute. It is suggested that any concerns about the disclosure of personal information by service providers are overridden by the public interest in combating and preventing this horrific crime. It is suggested, therefore, that the distinction between service providers in 13(1)(a) and (b) fall away, and that the same obligation to report without obtaining written consent be placed on all service providers mentioned in 13(1)(a). We also include self-reporting, because even though the people who are trafficked are citizens, and citizens are, there's a provision for citizens to report, we say that those who are victimized, who are victims, should be able to report the case themselves. And we are saying that in terms of the burden of proof, the burden of proof should not be on the victim, but it should be on the one who abuses the person that is trafficked. Then finally, towards the end, there is a chapter 11 of the bill, which deals with laws to be repealed or amended and are outlined in Schedule 1. We urge that the spirit and letter of the law itself, that is Sexual Offences Criminal Act, Amendment Act 32 of 2007, be retained so that the two laws are read together, because we think that particular law was very well considered. Final thought, I've mentioned socioeconomic conditions, and those who've read Shakespeare will recognize this. Romeo says, "Famine is in thy cheeks, meat and oppression starveth in thy eyes, contempt and beggary hangs upon thy back. The law is not thy friend, nor the world's law. The world affords no law to make thee rich. Then be not poor, but break it and take this." Apothecary replies, "My poverty, but not my will, consents. Romeo, I pay thy poverty and not thy will." How much time, Chair?
The time you have is to engage.
Okay. All right. I wanted to actually just say something about Ubutwala, but I see that...
You will use the engagement.
To explain why I'm...
Once in Parliament, you know how to do it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for listening to our presentation.
Thanks, Mrs. As a sitting arrangement here, this row up here is demarcated for members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm not going to say who is not a member of the Portfolio Committee, because I cannot claim to know everybody. But I'm saying in case there is that individual, you must know in these two rows, you must belong in the manner I've classified. Questions? Honorable Swartz and another member, Honorable Prof. Michael, three for now.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being a few minutes late. I was sitting in the back listening to the presentation. Could I just ask, I just caught the last issue where you raised the Sexual Offences Act, and you say that you'd like to see the two acts harmonized. Are you happy with the definition of trafficking in the Sexual Offences Act, which is the interim provisions? And there's a slight difference between that definition and the definition in this bill. Would you like to comment on that? Because clearly those interim provisions will then fall away when this act comes into being. And have you got any comments and suggestions as to the harmonization of the two, particularly when it comes to the definitions? That's obviously, and you might want to come back and give us a further input on that if you don't want to respond at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I have to congratulate the presenter for this wonderful input. But having said that, I want to say we acknowledge the phrase "women who have been trafficked and prostituted." But, big but, technically, do you cater also for those who have just been raped and not necessarily prostituted? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm very interested to hear your elaboration on the Ukutwala practices. But in the same breath, I'd like you to elaborate slightly on general indigenous law and when a husband dies and then the brother automatically takes on the wife, that kind of aspect of it as well. So if you could just elaborate slightly, you know, in a larger area regarding Indigenous law in general. I completely agree with your wanting to expand the definition of sexual offences. I agree 100% with that. You said in your presentation regarding prostitution that the very reason people are trafficked is because there's a need for them to be trafficked for prostitution. What is your feeling about regulating, the practice of prostitution and having regulations regarding prostitution, and do you feel that would in any way aid it? And then I must just say this, and I know that you speak on behalf of women, and I'm so happy that you do, that not only women are trafficked, many, many men are trafficked too. And I think that is something that we must always keep in our minds.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am also, like Michael, keen to find out why it is that Ugutwala would be associated with trafficking in human beings. But my question here is relating to the suggestion that the burden of proof must not be placed on the victim, but on the alleged trafficker. Because before you determine that the person is a trafficker, because this is a criminal offense that we are creating here. And I would imagine, unless things have since changed, that the person has to be presumed innocent until proven guilty, and that therefore the normal the normal principles would apply even in this particular kind of criminal case, kind of a crime, which would mean then that the burden of proof usually relies on the state. Now, what would be the basis of a departure from that normal principle of criminal justice administration?
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. To the presenter, I like what you said, that women are standing up now. I can't pronounce the word because I didn't write it down and I'm not looking at my work here. I'd like to know if have you got any research, because we are so interested in statistics. Because many times, like during the World Cup, everyone was afraid, you know, that trafficking will take place. But I think what will be interesting is to know if there are statistics on it and whether you did research. Of course, we met you before when it came to, speaking on sex workers in our committee. Thank you.
Just 2 points from the chair. Is one, in line with what Honorable Ngosi is saying, around the burden of proof. Generally, it is a convention that there's always intervention by sensitive societies on behalf of the vulnerables. Depending on the nature of the cause, sometimes it gets abused by those who are vulnerable, and then to the extent that it undermines the very cause itself. In this instance, don't you foresee a situation where this could be abused? And if you foresee that, how would you prevent that if the burden of proof is suggested in the manner you say? And the last point, you spoke about the position of vulnerability. There was a presentation by Catholic bishops yesterday here speaking about situation of vulnerability. I hope that is the same between position and situation, instead of psychological, and your comment on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And as I said, I'm accompanied by a very strong delegation behind me, and I'd like them to take any of the questions that have been asked. I don't know if my team is ready, but can I just start off with
That's yes. Yeah.
Yes, this is my team behind me. Honorable Swart, indeed, certain aspects, of course, of the Sexual Offences Amendment Act 32 of 2007 will fall away because of this particular act. And what I'm saying is that we want to keep the spirit and letter of the Sexual Offences Act. We have, of course, lifted some aspects from that ourselves. And we are happy with the definition of trafficking that is in the bill right now. Except that we are adding utwala to abduction. And maybe I can come straight to the issue of utwala, and I'll leave the rest of the questions to my team. I said before that I speak as a Zulu woman, and I'm very proud of that. I also speak as an African woman. When I call utwala and I ask that utwala be included in the definition of trafficking as a form of abduction. And I said also that I respect traditions. As long as they do not take away the rights in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And that refers to your question too, Honourable Member. Our Constitution subjects customary law and customary traditions to the Bill of Rights. So whatever custom practices has to be in line with the Bill of Rights. Now, I speak of on behalf of many African women who did not finish school, who were taken out in Sanat 2, Sanat 4, because according to the parents, they were ready for marriage. And they were abducted and forced into a love relationship with a man they didn't know in some cases, which I would consider to be against the spirit of our Constitution. And I call on our traditional leaders and all African men not to use culture to undermine the dignity of women. And culture itself has been corrupted. We know how colonization intertwined with patriarchy and confused our understanding of some of these traditions. And I just want to quickly say something that was said by a man, an Nguni man, Zolile Nogwe, who spoke at the Embrace Dignity petition media launch on 8 June 2010. And I wish to quote him. He said, "We are encouraged by our brothers, friends, and even sometimes our fathers to have a lack of emotional connection and empathy for these women, who in most cases have been forced into their life by other unscrupulous men. At every turn, the moral impulse to be respectful and humane is sacrificed by a manufactured sense of entitlement and trade. It's fine as long as I pay. Yet it is the very payment that perpetuates the continued sexual exploitation of women and children the world over." And in closing, Zolile Nogwe said, "So it is not without foreboding that I find myself on this platform with more than a request but a moral obligation to say to men, be respectful, be empathetic, and you'll find it harder and even impossible to support and continue the industry of human sex trafficking." And he concluded, "I am Zolile Nogwe, and I embrace dignity." This is a call to men. Indeed, we include young men who are also prostituted. We include male children who are abducted and abused. Thank you.
Thank you, I'm sorry. My name is Mediatrice, and I'm a project manager of Embrace Dignity. I believe about the evidence of the trafficking that we don't have today, and that I just want to ensure you that we have research that is in progress that will be completed soon, but it's in progress. Whether I will be able to tell them how more people are being trafficked into sexual exploitation, maybe for other reasons as well. But that can't stop us from doing the right work because there's no evidence, because the evidence is within us. We just need to be truthful to ourselves and bring the problem ahead for people to discuss about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The name is Keith Lawrence, South African Council of Churches Parliamentary Office. Representing the South African Council of Churches, working in partnership with the Embrace Dignity Campaign. Part of the delegation, yes, sir. Two comments. One, just to say, is that the South African Council of Churches has come in full swing, individual Christians as well as church leaders, in support of the campaign. If you look at the website, thousands of ordinary Christians as well as church leaders have supported the campaign. I think it's significant to read the support of the General Secretary of the South African Council of Churches saying that the victims of trafficking could well have been his mother, his sister, his relative. And also, yes, that they dealt with the churches in response to these concerns. Secondly, I'm talking about the question of girls being trafficked. They acknowledge that girls are trafficked, but they acknowledge too the part of the condition of equality and dignity of society is overwhelmed very frequently. This was stated by Professor Clara Debella, who is the of the CRS Center in the South African Council of Churches and a professor in sociology of religion. So religion and scriptural interpretation underline the rational value and dignity of equity, particularly the promoting and dominant role of the world's male-female relationship. And so this goes to get a much of what is the picture of the society the parallels that are affected by the majority of the victims of their children. That's perpetuated by religious and cultural interpretations of moral dominance. Same as those for the balance of creation by the majority of the ecology. The logical conclusion that it's done under sustainable poor ecology and under the principle of the borrowing is that all of our own expectational relationships and equality that's not the most breakdown ultimately of relationships and that's what we've seen in the trafficking. Finally, just to say that the Council of Churches is supportive also carrying out the progressive realization of the rights of equity, particularly the life of society and the economy. And that alternatives are to be provided for trafficking as work options. Because trafficking and its related sexual exploitation is not sustainable livelihood, it's not decent work. And so we have to see this, which is a very good basic legislation, started by the recommendation of the EDC, also going forward, that not our world, but not our world, but we have sustainable evidence that demonstrated work through perhaps the powers of the development department. And we have the market, which depends very much on things, but if they look at the values of our constitution of equity to the foreign relations, and particularly the outcomes of the proposed piece of legislation. So, my support will provide a little breath to what it fits. But the power is not being able to do that at the moment, sir.
I will try to be as short as possible because I'm already eating up time. The culture for inviting us from India to share the experience of the different harbor and 72 that can be provided of trafficking. Who wanted to ensure that the shadow of the harbor can be provided of trafficking in South Africa. As you have prepared the bill, which is a very, very good basic legislation, now just some answers to the questions raised by the ordinary members of the committee. The first one was about research and statistics. I looked actually told our headquarters that statistics will come with time, and the way in those services are provided to victims of trafficking by our California, and that is happening by natural and animal anymore. So it is very, very important to fast start the service prevention, and you will get better data and more knowledge of those who are trafficked. The other question was that why is the burden of proof fell to the transfer, to the perpetrator of the crime? In the case of trafficking, when it's found that victims of trafficking are so traumatized, that the burden of the crime is Stockholm syndrome, that the burden to actually become dependent on the goodwill of the trafficker, and that unable to speak up without counseling and some kind of therapy for a period of time. And sometimes the producer, but they're happy to be in a situation that is pleasant. So before a period of counseling is provided, it is very difficult for a victim of trafficking to provide the proof. And therefore, this item has been introduced into the conversation. The other was about regulation of prostitution, which was raised by another honorable member of the council, is that this is only the career method of dealing with the issue of regulation of prostitution, whereas prostitution was regulated for business control. So the British soldiers and the class in the service of the British Empire were not the syphilis. And there were other reasons, and that is the latest so that they were the biggest disease from. Now, it is also allowed us to be the foundations who are promoting the same idea, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who are trying to keep trafficked victims disease-free for 9 or 6, but they don't have to protect the very environment from the world. This legislation will do the reverse and provide more real chances to the world. Thank you.
In closing,
maybe before you close, the chief has got more food for you.
Okay, thank you. I welcome that. And can engage outside. No.
Wait, let the chief speak.
Yes, Chairperson, that is indeed my title. I'm a traditional leader. But I'm here in Parliament as a comrade, a member, an ordinary member of the ANC. There are platforms where I would act and speak as a traditional leader. In fact, the presentation about Ubutwala being considered to be abduction gives a lie to this often stated position in the memoranda in this bill, that their advisors have established that this particular bill has nothing to do with culture and custom, and therefore it's not necessary for it to be referred to a house of traditional leaders. I think we've come across so many bills that pretend to have nothing to do with culture, only to find that in the body of the bill itself, it's all to do a lot with culture. This is not this here has indicated correctly that colonialism corrupted African culture to the extent that it has been distorted and has lost its meaning and significance and the reasoning behind it. So it means therefore that we should be careful to guard against interpreting African ways of life in accordance with the manner in which they have been distorted by the colonialists that she has mentioned. Because it's clear that the very reason that the department excluded Ubutwala is because the department knows that you first of all have to have an understanding of what Ubutwala is. You have to have a definition of Ubutwala before you decide whether or not it is part of abduction, is part of trafficking in human beings or not. So we cannot quickly go and say and agree, at least that's my view, that we should accept that proposal, that abduction must also include Ubutwala. Ubutwala must be considered as part of abduction, because that is not necessarily the case. And also, Chairperson, if departments coming up with these bills were to engage Contralesa, they would find that a lot of progressive thinking does obtain there. For instance, the question of forcing people into marriage is no longer something that will be supported by traditionalists, especially when it has to do with the distortion of the original intent of a particular practice. Let me stop there, because this is not a platform for that.
The advantage is that you're speaking as a lawyer, as a comrade, as a chief. Now your language can help clarify issues. I think the intention of the hearings, conventionally, is not to agree at all cost or disagree at all cost with those who are making submissions. The bottom line is that we must engage so that the clarity of that which is presented is not lost, so that when the committee sits, whether we agree or disagree with that, we must have understood what is being said. So the purpose is not to agree or disagree with you, Mrs. And then your final response.
Thank you very much. I do value the input by my comrade and brother, Inkosi Patekile Olomisa. I think members of parliament are fully equipped to know how to ensure that a practice that has actually, which constitutes a harm to our constituents, is actually mentioned as such, as being a crime. But I'm sure we will engage more with the members of the committee, and we will avail ourselves. And the problem is that in exercising what is tradition, the general public does not always understand it in the way that Amakhosi and those who came before them understand it. So if there is education of the public, as well as education of the criminal law justice system, because, for example, we know that there is socioeconomic vulnerability, but not every magistrate, not every judge will understand that to include the inferior status of women. They might just think of poverty is the interpretation. And what we really like about this bill is that it creates an opportunity for those who are going to be implementing the law to be educated. And I would trust that the committee in Parliament, and I see Honourable Thompson, will assist in educating our magistrates, our Amakhosi, what this actually does to women. As I said, we are not against culture, we are not against tradition. Then finally, I just want to thank President Zuma, President of the country, and the ANC for supporting the petition that we have put online. And I just want to quote what he said, President Zuma said, "Sex trafficking and prostitution are ruining the lives of millions of women and girls around the world and in South Africa today." And he ended that with a call to men, do not buy women or children for sex, and don't support those who do. I know that some people here have complained that we will not have the money or the financial resources to implement this bill. I want to end by saying, where there is a will, there is a way. Are women cheap? Are we going to say there's not enough money, therefore we allow women, the precious asset that produces future generations, are we going to allow them to be killed and to be abused because there's not enough money? And what I'm going to say here is that the resources to end this exploitation are available from the exploiters themselves. And I will be asking the president of the country to include in the assets forfeiture unit the mandate to forfeit the proceeds of these crimes against women. And the money will be there. They are driving all sorts of cars these days from the exploitation of women. Those are proceeds of crime, and the president must send Olomisa to try and get those assets back. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
The president must send the honorable Olomisa to fetch those proceeds. to fetch those proceeds. It was quite, is it animating? I'm not sure whether that is the right word. It was really, thanks a lot, Embrace Dignity. Time is on our side. Human rights, what this means, now that we have factored in human rights in this program, it means we automatically follow in that pattern. It means the litter will come after that and everything else stays the same. I just wanted to clarify that. Human rights.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I'm very proud to be following Embrace Dignity campaign today because I think that they've articulated a lot of the human rights concerns that the Commission has. And so I think it made it much easier to present our submission, which I'm sure members have in front of you. I think, as you all know, and just for the record, for those who may be new to this committee sitting in today, the Human Rights Commission is an independent statutory body that's created by our Constitution and to, amongst other things, promote respect for human rights and a culture of human rights, promote the protection, development and attainment of human rights. And it's within this constitutional mandate that the Commission makes our submission today. I'm going to go through some of the submission fairly quickly, and I'm going to call upon Judith Cohen, our Head of Program in relation to Parliament and International Affairs, to join me in anything that she would want to add to what I may have left out. The Commission has formally engaged with this legislative process, which has been a fairly lengthy and lengthy consultative process. This is the fourth time we're engaging with this process. The first time was in 2005, and the last was in 2009. And over the years of engagement, the Commission wishes to acknowledge and to thank the committee and to all those who have been involved in the drafting of the bill, that many of the suggestions that have been made in other submissions have been taken into consideration and are evidenced in the number of changes that have been effected in the various drafts of the bill. So the Commission therefore just wants to make very few submissions in addition to those. Before joining that, I just want to raise the fact that, and I think Nuzi Swe has already alluded to the fact that South Africa has signed and ratified international instruments such as the UN Protocol to prevent, suppress and punish trafficking in persons and known as the Trafficking Protocol of 2000. And that this bill, through creating domestic trafficking legislation, is both honoring the commitment and responding to a very urgent need. The key submissions that we'd like to make is the first one, is in terms of the definition of trafficking, because we think that's extremely important, and that the definition of trafficking, which is currently placed within the definitions clause, that it should be placed in the main body of the Act, so that as trafficking is the main subject. The second submission is in relation to sentencing of offenders, and one of the key things, points we'd like to make is the need for training of judicial officers in trafficking. The third is in relation to written consent of adult trafficking victims, and the point that we want to make is that there should be mandatory reporting, that victims, as we know, may be reluctant to provide consent due to their fear of intimidation and their lack of power in relation to traffickers. There needs to be a zero-tolerance approach to abuse of vulnerable persons that Parliament has demonstrated on a number of occasions. And we do provide an example from the Older Persons Act, which is in the submission and which Judith can detail if anyone would like that. In terms of the wording certified to be a victim, the Commission's position is that that serves to stigmatize the victim stroke survivor, and that the clause be reworked, and there is a very specific proposal as to how it should be reworked in the written submission. And finally, the issue of Okutwala, which has already been dealt with, emerges also from the number of cases before the Commission in the Eastern Cape. We'd like to support the submissions that have been made by the visitor just now, and I think that just in relation to a key point that the Honourable Member has raised around tradition, the Commission acknowledges that traditional leadership at the highest levels have spoken out and condemned some of the highly publicised incidents which some traffickers claim to be as Ukutwala, in inverted commas. And so I think that traditional leadership at the highest levels have already acknowledged the distortion of the practice without infringing on the way in which traffickers then have used the name Ukutwala to condone what they are doing. And I think that must be clearly clearly separated. I think that in welcoming this bill, the Commission also recognizes the fact that the by naming trafficking, by naming crimes as trafficking, this bill takes an extremely important step forward in creating visibility about abuse that is currently invisible and silent in a large number of areas. So, for example, the cases where on farms where farm workers from neighboring countries are exploited during the seasonal for seasonal work, and then before being paid, when it comes time to be paid for seasonal work, police who collude with those farm owners actually are called in to remove those farm workers on the grounds that they don't have the necessary documentation, and they are then sent back across the border. So the issue, so from examples like that to the examples that Nuziswe has already raised, the issue of how this is happening will become more visible, and that's an extremely important contribution that this bill will make. Without wanting to dampen the enthusiasm for this bill, I want to also raise a caution perhaps in terms of the need to extend the eye of Parliament into other areas that will address the question of what drives the vulnerability to being trafficked. And in terms of what drives the vulnerability to being trafficked, the issue of the causes must be addressed. And I know that isn't simply within the purview of this committee, but as parliamentarians, you have an extremely important role to play in examining that. Earlier this year, in May, I attended a meeting in Geneva called by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights on trafficking, and sat for chairs listening to the enormous amount of work that is being done, both within our country but across the world, trying to turn trafficking around, trying to stop it. And despite all of the massive amount of work that has been done, at the end of the 2 days, what was very clear is that trafficking continues to increase and is growing like a tidal wave across the world. And the key question that therefore that has to be asked, which I raised in my closing presentation, was that unless we begin to deal with what is causing the poverty and inequality, what is causing what is it about a world and its system in which human beings can be bought and sold, in which we have such a resurgence of modern day slavery, needs to be addressed. Unless we look at what is creating the demand for cheaper labor at the cost of human dignity. For example, if we don't look at all of those things, if we don't look at the trade agreements and the way in which they actually cost jobs in this country, that have cost jobs of women who are now being trafficked and children who are now being trafficked. The rights that we fought for, Chair, in this country were not just the rights for some people, it was the rights for all people. Thank you.
a very, very efficient time consumption. Are you still presenting?
Chair, I've asked that my colleague Judith Cohen would...
I will draw my prayer.
I'm sure she'll know I have something. Thank you.
And I will be as economical chair. And I'm sure the committee is just sitting here asking, how is it possible the Human Rights Commission has got such a little to say about such an important issue? And I think it really does bear testimony. And there are many, many friends of the Commission sitting around this room today who we have been working with and engaging with for just so many years around this legislation. And perhaps just to share with the committee, in preparing for this submission, we sat with our previous submissions, we went through them, we pulled out where we thought the bill was not addressing some of our concerns. And when we really studied it and went into it, we realized that so many of our concerns had in fact been addressed. And I think this committee can really be confident that this bill has gone through very rigorous processes. And I'm just going to pick up on one or two things which Commissioner Govender has mentioned, and just to really reinforce. You know, just in terms of the definition and the placing of the definition, this has been an issue the Commission has raised on countless occasions. And it's for a number of reasons, and it also just goes to basic good drafting practice, which those of us who are lawyers are taught, and that is that where the subject matter of a bill has to be defined, that it ought not to be in the definition section but in the main body of the bill. And I'm sure members have found it difficult to negotiate that definition, because this is what the entire bill hinges on. When one goes through that definition, one has to look at three other definitions within the definition section. And then just to add to your little nightmare, when you get abuse of vulnerability and when you go look at that, there are then several other definitions within the definition section. Now, any ordinary mortal folk out there is going to battle. So it's more how are we going to make this bill user-friendly. We've got very good legal drafters. Can we not just put it into the main body of the Act and in some way just put it forward so that when police officers, when accredited organizations, when social workers have to engage with this legislation, we've set it out in the best possible way for them. The next point was just around sentencing of offenders. We are aware yesterday we had other staff sitting in on the hearings. There has been some discussion around minimum sentencing and trafficking. Just to state that the Commission has consistently had a position where we do not support minimum sentencing as a general rule. And that we are rather of the view that one should rather perhaps have sentencing guidelines. And I think there, through our engagement with the bill, we are very pleased to note that many of the suggestions that we put forward, and they're in the legislation, Clause 11, where it sets out factors to be considered, many of those that are there are through the discussions and the processes that have happened over the year. And it will certainly provide guidance to the judiciary. I think when it comes to written consent of adult victims of trafficking in order to report it, I think there, when one really goes into it, in addition to what has been said by Embrace Dignity today, if one has to have the written consent and a professional person fails to report it, and you want to hold that doctor, that psychologist, that social worker accountable for not having reported it, they can just so easily turn around and say, I couldn't get the written consent. It's such an easy way out, and it will be a defense. And I think it has been very well explained here this morning that getting written consent will really be, in most cases, impossible. And that could mean then that whole Clause 13(1)(b) could just fall away. But I think as well it would be consistent with parliamentary approaches that we've seen when dealing with other vulnerable approaches, that members of parliament have spoken out very strongly and says when it comes to the abuse of persons who are vulnerable, we need a zero tolerance approach in this country. And I think that is what is called for here. Bearing in mind, and I think the Commission has to mention this, that once a victim of trafficking is exposed, she is at enormous risk, and we need to then ensure that the systems in place ensure that that victim is safe. And I think just lastly, just to mention the issue about debt bondage, which the Commission has on many previous occasions commented on, it is recognized throughout the world that in order to deal with debt bondage, one needs legislation. And in South Africa, we may well need comprehensive legislation in this area. We don't have it. It would be therefore advisable that we keep Clause 5 in the bill, flagging it that this may well be a stopgap measure, similar to what we did with the Children's Bill and the Sexual Offences Bill when we popped a few trafficking clauses in there. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, if you see me indicating time, I'm trying to protect your space of engagement because more clarity comes whilst we engage. Honourable Swartz.
Thank you for a very good submission from the Commission, and we do appreciate you've done prior work as well. I think of particular significance is Commissioner Govender's statement after her experience overseas that trafficking continues to increase like a tidal wave across the world. And that, I'm sure, is South Africa as well. Now, we have had submissions to say, but it's not on the increase. It's not
just a second, Honourable Swartz. Can we, amongst the chairs here, make sure that Honourable Ambrosini gets a chair over here? We don't want to call a hand up behind these chairs. Otherwise, we can end up getting tired and picking up any hand. Thank you. Proceed.
I think both of the Ambrosini and I would prefer to get
So, Chair, I appreciate we've got a major problem, and that is why we're looking at this bill. I'm just wondering from the Commission side whether you've done any research over the years into the issue of trafficking and the extent of it. I know the research that, and did you contribute at all to the Human Science Research Council's March report that came out that deals with a lot of very interesting issues. It deals with vulnerability, and it's something that we all need to study as we deal with this bill. Then two specific issues. The issue of minimum sentencing came up yesterday, and in fact, I think it's also this morning's submission. We recommend that minimum sentences should also be prescribed. The prior submitters. The reason why it came up yesterday is I raised it in the context of if we're going to have a recommendation of a minimum sentence in the very contentious Protection of Information Bill, then at the very least we should consider the same for trafficking. Now, I appreciate that you have reservations over the years with minimum sentences, but we know that the Constitutional Court has also upheld it. But I think your suggestion to look at guidelines is something for us also to consider. The last issue I also raised yesterday, coincidentally, the Malachi matter. And we know that the Constitutional Court, I wasn't aware of it, but the court gave a judgment yesterday where it declared the doctrine of tam quam suspectus de fuga, and as the resident Latin student, with due respect, how many years do you have of Latin? No, I'm only joking, but that doctrine is very important, and as I understand it, it relates to debt bondage in a certain way, and it's very significant that the court actually upheld, and I think that maybe, are you aware of that judge, and maybe you could just comment on that and the implications for debt bondage in general. I think it's a very useful Constitutional Court judgment. With those few comments, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have a question, but I want to give the presenter a very generous compliment and call on to say that her view that the training of judicial officers dealing with trafficking is extremely important. I concur. Thanks, Chair.
This is the last time I appoint a member who is nowhere. Honorable Thompson, after this, you must find your way where you are supposed to be. You must understand exhaustion goes with other things. I will end up pointing any head anywhere.
I take your point, Chair. But thank you very much, Chair. And one must just comment that it makes one very proud to have the two presenters to tell us what they're telling us today. Because I know they've done quite a lot of work on this for a long, long time. Perhaps this question is about to justice, but I'm just taking advantage of the fact that they exactly know why I'm asking this to them. I just wanted to know what would their comment be on the fact that, for example, the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act and the Children Act as well does make provisions for some of the aspects of the Bill Act, you know, victims of traffic. So what would you think? Would you not say this perhaps is a duplication? I just want your comment on that, because there is extreme provisions for some of this. Thanks.
Are sitting in wrong places. This is defiance of the chair.
No, Chair, we came a bit late and people are a bit moved around, so it's difficult. Chair, I'm more interested with the comment that we can do this act, but what is even more important is to deal with the cause and not just the effect. We can have acts, but in the ground, in the society, the environment in which we are living is not conducive. It's going to be very difficult to police this act, implement them, and make sure that we have the type of society that we have. And they've quoted the socioeconomic condition, which is so true, the inequalities and so on, socioeconomic inequalities. The other area, and I was happy that South African Council of Churches is here, is that I thought when he presented, he said they acknowledge that there's patriarchy, if not just in Christianity, that is totally dominating. And the churches influence all of us very much. Now the point is that it isn't just Christianity, Islam, Judaism, all religion across the board. Now my question is that, Christianity, which is dominant in South Africa, in order to create that environment that is conducive to treat especially women as human beings equal to men, is Christianity's effort to transform, for example, will the Bible, is there any possibility that the Bible can be rewritten, revised? I mean, God is Father, Jesus is Son, and the word Bible, I mean, is patriarchal. So I just want to know what transformation is taking place there to make our condition conducive.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wish to ask Commissioner Govender, when we look at the preamble and it speaks on the recognizing of the socioeconomic opportunities that contributes to making persons vulnerable to becoming victims of trafficking, do you, as the Chapter 9 institution of this country, do you think that government is currently doing enough to capture data on the trafficking of persons? And also, do government engage enough with the NGOs to ensure that we actually be able to have a database that will tell us about these women and children and even boys and men? I'm very concerned about this because
because I've heard that people are far less will know about the trafficking of persons, but there just doesn't seem to really be a database of how many. I know some also said that it is difficult when it comes to the research on the trafficking of women, but I think that could also be an excuse for, and then we need to talk about that. What is it? Is it money that is needed for that is needed to give to NGOs to really go into research so that we can get the data? And why are the social economic rights of people? Do you think that government is currently doing enough to ensure that our women are no longer vulnerable? And when it comes to law, but around honor, I know that there are only 4% of women and that is the case that I know what is it to South Africa. I want to give out those things. So it's housing, it is, and when a woman doesn't have a home, what does she have to give to her family? It's not just a man feeling a man when he is, you know, the breadwinner and the owner of a piece of land or a property. Do we have enough stats on these things so that we can be sure how many of our women are homeless and how many of our women really have jobs? And what is the chapter 9 institution with regard to your functions? What are you going to do to ensure that government, if not, that they do deliver on the economic rights of women and children?
Margus?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we're taking advantage now of our commissioner, because we know from where she comes from. Yesterday, with one of the presentations, I just want to hear you, how do you feel about it? When it comes to this bill itself, I think it was two presenters felt that there should be a separate section on children, because children experience trafficking differently to adults. So I'd just like to hear advice on that. And then when it comes to the question that the Honourable Thompson spoke to, I would like to know that when it comes to these sections within the Children's Act, the Sexual Offences Act, when it comes to trafficking, will that have to be repealed? Thank you.
Over to you. Can you respond? No. What are the Bambos saying? Peace. Peace.
Dolce in fundo. Now, I've got four questions, some of which I've already asked other presenters. The first one is a new one, and I need to have some clarity on this Ukotuela issue. The Institute for Strategic Study came to us and said, it is covered, take it out, it shouldn't be covered, put it in a special piece of legislation. The presenter before had a concern that it would not be covered and said, make it sure that it is included in the definition so that it be covered. In Kofi, if I understood it correctly, suggested that Ukutuela is something different and therefore it is not covered and it should not be covered, and what it is actually to be covered is an abuse of it. As I understood the cultural practice, and I'm no expert, and as I read the definition of a marriage in which not two parties having consented being a forced marriage, I was under the impression it was included. So I just want to have clarity on what it is that it's before us. Question number one. Question number two, which I've asked before, on the definition of exploitation. Many of the situations in which in other countries the people who are trafficked find themselves is to work at terms and conditions which are way below minimum standards. because they are illegal immigrants, because they are pregnant, because all the cases of vulnerability listed there. However, the definition of exploitation does not cover working at conditions which are illegal, below minimum standards. Why not? Should it not? Third question, and is on the entire issue of data. I mean, we do know that there are cases of Utukwala. Before us, after 2 days, there is no firm evidence. Thanks. Am I mispronouncing it? Utukwala. Forgive. Utukwala. Okay, sorry, and forgive me, it's my accent. In Italy, we call it. Okay. That's what we use. Okay. But there is no firm evidence. There's lots of beliefs that trafficking takes place. As I said, in 2000, when I was in Home Affairs, we asked, and we had to ratify this convention, we asked for any case, and there was no case in 2000. Here there is a great amount of evidence. There is no firm evidence of significant case. So I need to have an understanding whether we are setting up this enormous administrative capacity and state resources ahead of need in preemption of a problem or in response to that. Then, following from that, there is a very difficult situation. The difference between a sex worker, whom is a criminal, ill-advisedly so, but that's how the law in South Africa is. But the difference between a sex worker and a victim of trafficking is something that it is in her or in his mind. It is for her to say that she's doing it because she likes it, she wants the money, it's her chosen profession, or because XYZ forced her to do it under traits, under false pretenses. So, and depending on what she says is in her mind, she is either a criminal who goes to jail, or is a victim who gets a huge amount of benefits, protection, and nurturing by the state. Confronted with the choice, one may choose, may determine what the likely response is. So my concern, coming from the experience of the refugee protection system, which is widely abused, is what type of abuse we are going to see of this system. And to protect a few users, are we not going to have an enormous amount of people that are going to abuse it? Should we not reconsider the issue of criminalizing sex workers? So is that somebody in our agenda? Last issue, if I can read my note. Now, I think these are all my issues. This my four or five issues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner?
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to first ask my colleague to start with some of the legal questions and some of the questions that she would be more equipped to deal with, and then I will follow on her.
Thanks, Commissioner. Just in terms of the issue around research, I think the simple answer is no, the Commission itself has not done any detailed research. However, we have been working and engaging with many organizations, some which spring to mind. I know that Binya, Omola Songololo, Annex CDW, there's then the Human Sciences Research Council on research, and we'd really urge committee members to really take the time out to read some of that research. It's really eye-opening and very tragic, and it will really enforce on members how important this legislation really is. We've also had the odd case come into the Commission's offices where it could border on, is this a case of domestic trafficking? And I think there to point out to committee members that took years of advocacy and lobbying to ensure that this legislation recognizes trafficking that takes place internally within the borders of South Africa. And specifically there we're thinking of your rural women who are trafficked to the cities to work as domestic workers and who are then also subjected to sexual exploitation. So certainly there have been a few instances, but as we all know, and it's coming through again and again, we do not have the stats. But one thing we know for certain is that there are women and children out there who desperately need this legislation. I think in terms of, and it's come up in a number of questions, what is the impact of this legislation in terms of existing provisions in the Children's Bill and the Sexual Offences Bill? I think there again, the Commission was deeply involved in the passage of both those pieces of legislation. In both cases, it was recognised this is a stopgap measure. And in both instances, that legislation is not fully comprehensive, nor does it have everything that is needed in order for South Africa to comply with its international obligations. And it was always envisioned when that legislation was passed that the provisions in the Children's Act and the Sexual Offences Bill would then fall by the wayside and that we would have full comprehensive legislation, which is currently before this committee, to deal with trafficking. So that has always been the thinking processes of those who've been involved in these processes for many years. I think in terms of the Malachi matter, no, we haven't had time to look at it, but just again to refer back to the comments that we made for this committee to flag, we may well need comprehensive debt bondage legislation in this country. I think in terms of keeping stats, again, we have dealt with that, and I think it was aptly the comment was made by Rishira Gupta from AFMI-ARP, who's visiting us from India. We need the legislation to start getting the stats. I mean, if one starts speaking to example to the South African police services and how they capture stats, chances are at the moment they don't have it there, something which says trafficking. And until they get something there which says trafficking, we're not going to get the stats out of the South African police services. So I think that's where the importance of this intersectoral committee really comes in. And the whole crux of this legislation, I think where this committee can play a very strong role, is possibly in a year's time to call all the relevant stakeholders in and actually find out what is going on with this legislation. The legislation is good. It's all going to come down to implementation thereof. I think in terms of exploitation, slavery, minimum, whether there should be violations in the definition of exploitation as to violations of labor law, I think there one's going down a road of how severe or how bad. Are we speaking about just a violation of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, which is happening to so many people in South Africa on a daily basis, or is trafficking a crime where it becomes like a person is held in conditions of slavery, and one could potentially land up in a position where it comes down to semantics in unpacking whether one has got slavery, for example, one would be looking at labor law. I think we must also bear in mind that this legislation is going to have to be interpreted by the courts, and that's why we all want prosecutions in order that we can start unpacking what is in this law, what in fact is actually there. I think I've answered most of the questions. I'll hand over to the Commissioner.
Thanks, Judith, for that. I think just to, yes, to absolutely to wrap up, I think the first question about increasing vulnerability and the tidal wave, I want to link that to Member Kekane's point around causes, not just effects, and socioeconomic rights. And I think in our last presentation to this committee on a different matter, the Human Rights Commission submission on our work, that issue clearly is one that members of Parliament need a debate on and need to have clearly to be looking at the priorities that are laid down by the Constitution. Because I think that clearly from the kinds of questions that were raised and the kinds of disagreements amongst yourselves as MPs in the last meeting, that issue is not resolved. But I would suggest it's a very serious one for urgent attention by the committee and by Parliament. The issue being the focus on socioeconomic rights and the priority of socioeconomic rights. Because I think that when we raised it in as the Human Rights Commission in our last discussion with the committee, clearly there were different opinions on that between members of Parliament themselves. And absolutely, the issue of patriarchy is a central one, because it's a global patriarchal system and a local patriarchal system, and it's a question of how is that engaged. I wouldn't see that as an either-or thing, that you first got to deal with the one, then the other. I think we have to deal with it simultaneously. That's the reality of our situation, and therefore this bill is extremely important, and it will make an important contribution. The issue of data is often an issue of who is seen, who is not seen. Who those in power see, who those in power don't see, stop seeing. And one good example of that was the Beijing report that Ms. Iswin and I worked on in 1994-95 for South Africa. And what we found with that report was that the report that had been prepared for us when we came into Parliament in 1994 had already been done by those who had been here, and they'd excluded all women in the former homelands and self-governing territory. So the question of who is seen, who is not seen, so the issue of capturing of data and connecting the data, interpreting the data, are all important questions. The issue of Chapter 9 institutions and socioeconomic rights that was asked, I think that absolutely our role is that we investigate, we hold hearings on socioeconomic rights. We've submitted to Parliament through this committee a whole range of reports. We are still waiting to hear how Parliament is processing those reports, those very many reports on a whole range of socioeconomic issues. Because we are hearing the voices of people who are affected directly, we bring that to Parliament, and it is Parliament's responsibility to debate those reports, to adopt those reports, to ensure that they are referred to the relevant committee for playing its oversight role on the executive, the relevant executive department. And finally, I think I just want to, in relation to one other issue, something that the committee on women, whose chair is here today, started or is engaged in, was around the women's budget. And Parliament in government in the 98-99 national budget actually committed to ensuring that the entire budget was gender sensitive. Question for MPs is, how are MPs monitoring that is happening and using the budget process? And I think finally the question in relation to sex work, I think there is a bill on adult prostitution that will be coming to Parliament, and we would be happy. In fact, the Commission has done a great deal of work already in relation to this, and we'll be making a submission on it when it comes before Parliament, and we'd be happy to engage the committee further on that in much greater detail and with much more time at our disposal than we have right now. Thanks.
I guess the issue of socioeconomy.
An answer.
To what?
The reading of whether Utukwela is in or...
Sorry. We know you mean
Ukutwala.
Let's not repeat what you said.
Whether the reading is in and out or in the present definition.
No, Honorable Abusin, I will advise you, because of the vulnerability of your lips on this word, just read what is written. so that you will minimize deviations. All right, Commissioner.
I think I have addressed the issue in quite a lot of detail in response to some of the questions around Akutwala. I think the Honourable Member wasn't in the room then, but I'll allow my colleague to actually detail one point. Thanks.
Okay. I think I'll make the answer very brief and very short. Internationally, there is a crime recognized called trafficking. South Africa has signed various international agreements stating that we will criminalize trafficking. We have a definition in the Act where a certain set of facts present itself and the prosecuting authorities believe that they can prosecute those facts under this piece of legislation as trafficking, then we have trafficking. Whether people want to call that Akutwala or anything else, people can do that. But where a certain set of facts are present and it fits within this definition, which is internationally accepted and we've closely followed it, we have trafficking. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, would you allow me? I was in the room. I heard this. I understood it the third time. But my question is different. I'm confronted with the following statements. The Institute for Strategic Studies says it is included in the current practice as it is, take it out. Nkosi spoke, and you're also speaking, and said the practice per se does not seem to be included. What is included is what certain people pretended to be. So I called upon passing a piece of legislation which may or may not have an impact on a cultural practice which I'm not familiar with. I'm asking you two questions. Is the cultural practice included? And if so, is it prohibited?
The last time we did it.
Yeah.
I rule on the matter.
Okay. You will notice that in the Commission submission, whenever we have referred to Akutwala, we have put it in inverted commas. And that is a recognition of the fact that there are very different understandings of what Akutwala is and what Akutwala is not. And therefore, whether it is placed in this bill or not, will not impact on those situations where a various scenario exists which conforms with the definition of trafficking. And in those instances, whether people call it Akutwala or not, it is trafficking, and in terms of international norms and law, which has been agreed to, that is trafficking.
What I would request is that so that we digest in our minds. There are cultural references which may, in terms of existing law, be found to be objectively illegal. There are cultural references, the same cultural references, there are circumstances that even our law cannot find them illegal. So the point I'm trying to stress is that the challenge we have here, at what stage do you want to criminalize a cultural reference? At what stage do you deal with it when it is found to be illegal during practice? So this is the point I'm trying to throw it. It may be found to be illegal in terms of our law, under certain circumstances. It may be found not to be illegal in terms of our law, but at what stage do you positively and proactively decide to criminalize it? And that is the area in which we must try to find one another. It begins to call for those explanations by inquiry, to call for, and then try to find a balance somewhere. Because my fear in this, honourable members, is that there might be a lot of cultural issues that are wrong by the current standards. But I want to let people talk of those wrong things. There's a difference between combating a culture and leading people out of a wrong culture. And then how do we therefore legislate? We want a united society towards a commonly agreed system. So those are some of the things that this issue must take into account. So the second issue I wanted to raise is that this issue of socio-economy is that my understanding is that there's general commitment by society to provide acceptable minimum conditions for socio-economy for all. But there's also a duty by society to protect the conditions of minimum cohabitation, to ensure that there's acceptable health in those conditions. At times you will have to put law. And then at times you will have to punish people whether they are hungry or not, if the bottom lines are broken. And I think it is those balance. The point I'm trying to make is that when we talk about social economy, it applies across many issues where law is broken. But we need to strike a balance between the bottom lines in protecting a minimum coexistence amongst members of society, and at the same time accepting responsibility to ensure that there are acceptable socio-economic conditions. It is those issues that we need to strike to fight all the time to strike a balance. It's not an easy stuff. People are criminals, they steal because they are hungry. But theft is unacceptable. That's bottom line. So, but the society must accept to improve those conditions that lead people to steal. But at the same time, you can't allow people to steal because they are hungry. I think that's what I was trying to strike a balance. I'm sure the commissioner will accept that principle.
My point was very different, Chair. My point was really about those global trade agreements, for example, those global financial officials, which Parliament has a role and has power and relation to looking at in terms of the human rights impact, particularly on the poor. Thanks very much, Chief.
It would be useful to get that Malachi decision. It's the highest court of the land, and it was definitely, in my view, a trafficking issue, which came out very strongly yesterday. And in fact, we raised that issue previously in the run-up to the World Cup, and it relates to an exotic dancer that came from the Far East and was arrested in South Africa, locked away for trying to go back home and not paying the debt in bondage to a certain house, Rasputin, and she was locked away in Polesmore under that common law doctrine of a suspected flight risk, and that has now been found unconstitutional. And it has a huge impact on the whole issue of debt bondage, and it will be very useful for us to look into that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner. Educative interaction. You can't be a good elite where you are. You must be here. You will be giving us light from the dungeon.
Thank you so much for allowing me. Honorable members, we're inviting you to an art exhibition at the Dasa Democracy Center, which is actually based on this case of the woman from Moldova who was arrested in Polesmore. So if you have time, please go to Idasa, 6 Queen Street. Slavery has gone indoors. It's ongoing. Thanks, members.
Good morning, honorable members. Okay. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, colleagues. I must first say, excuse my nervousness. This is the first time I'm doing this. So please, unfortunately, my colleagues have thrown me into the deep end. So if I drown, please do rescue me. Ilitha Labantu welcomes the opportunity to make the submission. Ilitha Labantu, for those who might not know who we are, we're a social services and education organization working on addressing violence against women and children and supporting those affected by it. Now, over the past years, we have made submissions to the justice on the bill during its preparation. And we're pleased to note that certain recommendations that we made in our previous submissions have been taken into account, and that we fully support legislature for introducing and passing this bill. The name is Lesego Mokone. We would begin to say that the state has a duty to respect, protect, and promote and fulfill all rights as guaranteed in the Constitution. This bill seeks to enhance and advance the right to freedom and security of the persons, which includes the right to be free of all forms of violence, either from public or private sources. And it is for this reason that we support the bill. What we currently wish to deal with within the bill is that the bill only prescribes maximum sentences for offences committed by under the bill, and we require that where a maximum sentence is prescribed, a minimum sentence is also prescribed. Ilitha Labantu also suggests that the bill follow the example of the Sexual Offences Act by introducing a register on offenders convicted under the bill. The register would serve to also collect information as to the number of cases that are successfully prosecuted, and also to look to track repeated offenders and track trends within trafficking in general. Clause 13.1b, which speaks to written consent. We believe that the requirement that it may, that says may obtain, must be deleted and replaced with a provision that says they must report a matter to a police official and delete if the sentence that says if the victim has given his or her written consent in the prescribed manner. We also believe that section 13A1B must be read together with 13.9, which criminalizes a failure on the part of the officials to obtain written consent, or also a failure to report, because this might have an effect of non-reporting of victims of trafficking, and there would not necessarily be the criminal justice system might not necessarily be in a capacity to investigate those failures. The next point would be section 13.7a indicates that there should be a certification of the victim, but does not specify who would be the department or the lead agency that will be responsible for the issuing of the certificates. We further recommend that there be an appeal process available to the victim in the event that the designated department refuses to issue the certificate. And furthermore, that the designated department should give written reasons as to why it refuses to issue the certificate. In terms of section 17, we are of the opinion that the non-renewal recovery and reflection period of not exceeding 19 days might not be enough, especially in cases where the victim is presented with severe psychosocial trauma, that we recommend that the clause read, the recovery period should be 6 months, where a victim needs more time, a psychological assessment be conducted by a registered and a qualified psychologist who would then make the recommendations for more time for reflection. In terms of section 22.4, we suggest that after it said, she is, the sentence continues by adding the word, and also in the best interest of the child, be added. One of the final problems that we find on this, the bill does not address a situation where a victim of trafficking dies within the Republic, and we recommend that be added in to be read into the bill. And we wish to thank you, and that is how short my presentation was.
It is the light of the people or something like that. So you showed us the way. Questions, honorable members? Honorable Ambrosin, Honorable Suarez, Honorable Malakas.
They seem to be very conversant with the bill and done a very good study, and I am just becoming conversant with it. And I want to press you that you can help me reading it. And the difficulty I have on the same line of question, why would not any prostitute who is a pimp who keeps her money, therefore abuse her economically, or exercise psychological traits, or exercise physical traits, not be a victim of traffic within the definition of the bill? She would be in a vulnerable position as defined there, and would be exploited as defined there.
Can you repeat your question?
My question is that if I read this bill, each and every prostitute who is subjected to a pimp, and I'm not sure that's the only proper explanation, would be a victim of trafficking. I just want to understand whether my reading of the bill is correct or not. Obviously, they have analyzed it better than I'm doing now.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you for the submission. Just on your paragraph, on page 2, paragraph 5, and you might want to come back to us with a further written submission on this, but you make quite a stark allegation here where you say the bill in its current form does not address the issue of inter-country trafficking. We submit that this falls hopelessly short of what the bill seeks to achieve, etc., etc. And yesterday, another presenter also said that the inter-country trafficking is not dealt with sufficiently. Maybe you would like to comment on that, just in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regards to the presenter, I just want you to clarify the register issue. Because the thing is, we already have, you know, in social development, a register there when it comes to abuse or, you know, offences against children. We have the older person's register also in social development. The sexual offences bill also speaks to a register, the child justice bill too. And don't you think it will be cumbersome, because within social development, we already asked the question that all these registers, you know, they should put them, you know, have one register, you know, for the whole of government. Thank you.
Yeah, also, paragraph 9, you complain about clause 13, 7A doesn't indicate who's responsible for the issuing of the certificate. But have you looked at 13.5, which says an accredited organization or the provincial department of social development to which the referral has been made must, without delay in the prescribed manner, this is 5B, assess the person. And then I think the assumption would be it's the person doing the assessment that would issue the certificate. But then on the follow-up from my colleague's point, I mean, you might want to say that you know, the one way of the register, and I think that there is a problem of too many registers, and the implementation, for example, of the Register for the Child Justice Act versus the Register for the Children's Act. But you might want to say that the Sexual Offences Act register be amended to include the offence of trafficking. rather than the creation of a new register.
Thank you, Chair. On point 12, where the bill says, the point says the bill is that it does not address an instance where a victim of trafficking dies in the Republic. I think it should include also the local ones, the domestic ones, because it's not included for the local one as well.
Clemens.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the same paragraph, where the presenter says that the bill does not address this instance of a victim dying in the Republic, what suggestion would you make? Why should the bill deal with such an instance, if you have any ideas? And also, I'm curious to know that actually, as you say in paragraph 5, that the trafficking of young girls from rural areas to urban areas, I'm familiar with that. But now you say, and vice versa, meaning that even villagers out there also get young girls from the urban area to marry them, to put them in forced marriages. I thought there was one way to traffic. I didn't know that. Yeah, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Proceed.
Thank you. I've got a few to deal. To address the first question about prostitutes, honourable member, I hope. I believe sexual exploitation under the Sexual Offences Act and related matters does address the issue where a woman is forced into prostitution through that. Now, specifically, I think that the discussion on the definition of trafficking has constantly tried to address, as you initially said, that it's a question of where the woman places herself. Is she doing sex work because it's her source of income and she enjoys it, and she's taken a conscious decision to do that? It's a question of, is she forced, coerced, removed from one point, and forced into a situation where sexual exploitation happens? I think that would go into, as the debate continues, on how do we expand and bring the definition together, because I still believe that that would continuously be the question, as to say, is trafficking about sex work, or is it trafficking about exploitation beyond just sex work? Now, to address as the issues as the members have come in, I actually welcome that the members felt that I should have added more detail to my submission when we tried to keep it as short as possible, given the volume. I believe that you would have to read through to just to pass this bill. Now, when you talk about Section 5, you must read it together with our contention comes to, when it talks about internal within the country, you only dealt with in Clause 25, where Chapter 5 details how we should deal with foreign victims of trafficking, but not necessarily detail how we would deal with a victim of trafficking within, which is only dealt with in Clause 25 within the bill, that just indicates that you may not return an adult victim of trafficking to an area within the Republic from which she was trafficked. Now, how do you say, do you not the Child Care Act, let's say the Children's Act says, talks about family reunification process within social development. Would a victim of trafficking not need to go through those similar processes? Which is because, one, you cannot keep somebody who's from Limpopo in Cape Town indefinitely and not attempt to rebuild and reconnect this victim with the communities or the area or the culture she comes from. So those is one of our contentions to say, within the country, we have not consistently dealt with. To speak to Honourable Member Holomisa on whether there is evidence of such, culturally, within African tradition, from years, there's been a system ongoing where a child is moved within families. You go live with an aunt in a rural area because there's a better opportunity, or you're running away from criminal activity within the township. Now, that is a commonly acceptable practice. But once the situation becomes exploitative, which is what we're beginning to see reported in various forms, then the question becomes, is this trafficking? Because there was consent to say, yes, you can send your 13-year-old daughter to live with us. We will make sure she's taken care of. But the 13-year-old daughter comes in and becomes unpaid labor within the community or the household from which she was removed. The child was removed. Was it under false pretenses? Now, it's that continuous debate that would now... Trafficking is a very complex issue. It is not clean cut. It is not somebody... Abduction is easy. You are forced. There was physical removal. Trafficking deals with psychology. It deals with the manner in which communication happens between the two parties. So for us to say inter-country might necessarily address those cultural practices that, yes, I was raised by grandmother or grandmother's sister in rural Northwest. I came from Soweto and I went to Lebowa home. Now, those questions would come in to say, once that child finds herself in an exploitative situation, do we punish the party for exploiting the child, or do we punish the party for trafficking? Because this child was removed from a primary residence. So those are one of the contention with that, with those issues. The register. I fully welcome your comment about maybe we need to recommend that the amendment of the sexual offense of the register within the Sexual Offences Act. But also, if you look at Section 41 of the Act of the duties and responsibilities of the intersectoral committee. Now it says they must issue out an annual report. Now, where would they begin to draw that information unless there is an administrative structure that will deal with that issue in a more concise manner? Now, when it comes to certification, you read sexual clause 13.7. You must read together with clause 5B and section 6. I must go back to the Act to understand, so that I could also read through. Now, those two clauses just speak to what should happen once the victim, the assessment process. But it does not necessarily say, would that accredited organization then certify it and be an acceptable certification, or shouldn't the assessment organization, the accredited organization and social development find a mechanism that this certificate, to avoid abuse, the asylum seekers, home affairs, the asylum seekers certification has become an abuse document. Yes, it's from one department, but it's become an abuse document. How then do we guarantee the integrity of that certification if we do not clearly designate who should be the actual issuer of the certificate? The final one. What happens if a victim dies within the country? Now, you might have a foreign victim of trafficking who dies within the country before reparation happens. Now, if we do not deal with the issue of the return of the remains, mortal remains, whether from within the country to another area within the Act, this victim will sit in a state morgue and not necessarily have proper burial ritual undertaken unless we say we address it specifically here to say, should a victim die, this is what needs to happen, whether the body should be repatriated back to home country, whether the person would be buried within South Africa, and should within 10 years that we need to exhume and reparate, that be addressed within the Act.
Just a small point. I'm still lost on the paragraph 5, the inter-country trafficking, because to my mind there's a lot. I mean, chapter 6, services to adult victims. I would suggest that the presenter, I mean, that Elita Lavantu, give us actually more detail around which sections they think are not covered, rather than engaging on it further now. But I just wasn't. I don't think we may not be. There may be a misunderstanding. So if there are still problems with the perception that the bill does not apply to sufficiently to people trafficked within South Africa, give us those sections that you feel there's inadequate coverage. Because to my mind, the Act does apply. There are certain chapters which are limited to, are dealing specifically with people trafficked from outside the borders of the country, and they relate to deportation and things like that. But there's an enormous amount covering internal trafficking. So if you feel, upon reading the bill again, that it's not covered, please do a further follow-up submission with the detail.
Shepherd, if you remember yesterday, there was an issue on compensation that came up time and again during the presentations yesterday. And I think if we're talking about the issue of death, we cannot separate it from compensation as well. So I think it is very important when we talk about it, those who die within the country that are not from the country, we include also those who are coming from South Africa. We cannot leave them out if we say this should be included into the bill.
Final response, sir?
Honourable Member, I take your suggestion and I would reflect again and go with my colleagues to the Act again. And as to compensation, that would be a welcome, but then we also need to be specific to say if a victim does die, who then claims compensation? Because we do not want to sit with legal, with the country sit with legal wrangling over whether it's the dependents of the deceased or family members saying we're entitled to compensation because the deceased was a victim. So that might, I think the commission would have to come back. That would be my suggestion, that we go back and redo, look at that in the legal, then the legal framework, whether we could accept that in that part. Thank you.
I'm proud I can say, your fear was baseless. You're just misleading us so that we can be too considerate. Well done, Elita. Counter trafficking coalition? Where are you? Let's counter it. Counter trafficking coalition. Let's counter it, Manya. Yes.
Thank you. I'm not going to be lengthy. I'll try to just squeeze everything into 5 minutes or so to speak. My name is Willie Mate. I'm from the Counter Trafficking Coalition. It's not the same as the Fizwa from the Dignity. Embrace Dignity. They spoke about the coalition of trafficking of women, something like that. We're formerly known as the Western Cape Provincial Task Team, but now we're known as the Counter Trafficking Coalition. And this coalition was formed by 15 different NGOs, and I'm very happy to say that some of them presented, and you will see with my presentation that there is some similarities, so to speak. There was Annex and Molosongololo, ISS, and yeah, whole lot of, I think 4 to 5, they already presented. And our primary focus as the coalition is on public education, advocacy and lobbying, rapid response, research, and maintaining and promoting the trafficking helpline, which I think was dealt with by Annex yesterday. And I'll jump to just, that was just a background I'll just jump straight to the note that we would like to make to the thing, to the committee today. On child trafficking, I think this was echoed by Molo Songololo, that we feel that there's a need to have a chapter that deals specifically with child trafficking. And there were some questions that were raised, and comments also. But what I'm saying is that for the fact that it's been raised by different organizations, it says something. And our contention is that children, as has been said, children are vulnerable, so to speak. So we believe that if it can be, we can have a separate separate chapter on that. And our second point is in counter trafficking, which I think it has been dealt with. It came up so many times. And another point that that we feel is on the same thing. I think that on issues of ugutwala, for trafficking, for human trafficking to be defined within the context of South Africa, so that we do not find ourselves with something that was raised on the issue of issues of ugutwala, where there's just a confusion as to what does ugutwala really mean. Is it trafficking or not? Is it does taking a girl to, I don't know, to another household and turn that particular girl into a thing, a wife, does that, is that trafficking in itself? So, but I think we still need to engage more, and I think Honorable Chief has dealt with that. Another point that we were under in country was reintegration. Because I don't think you can repatriate someone who's from the Limpopo province who's been trapped. So we need a recourse on that as to what measures, what kind of measures do we need to take when we're taking back these children back into their villages. And I think Lee Talabantu did mention that one, whereby in our society, especially due to poverty, you find that parents are giving away their children to come and live with their aunt or family members, so they can get a good education and a more advanced lifestyle. And for on punishment, because the punishment says that we'll punish the person who carries, we'll punish again the parents if they are involved. So if you have an innocent, illiterate woman who doesn't know, she does not, that she doesn't care, but she doesn't know what's going to happen to this child when she arrives at a destination. What recourse? We need to really look into that again. And I think this is falls under in country trafficking. That if we do give it attention as much as we gave, but I think it was raised by some honorable members, that where do we need to position in country? I'll be more than glad to provide the committee with where we can squeeze it in. And I think also Annex did, I think Juleka yesterday, I don't know if she did circulate what's your document, but we are still willing to. And as I'm saying that, this is a joint submission. It has been endorsed by close to 13 different NGOs that are our member affiliates. So I'm saying that we're willing to provide you with more information on that. On definitions, another point, when we were going through the bill, and another thing is that we just wanted to be more readable to, you know, when we are going on the campaign on awareness raising, that especially in country, that some of the words that we found in there, we believe that they need to be included under definition. And this is not to limit or not to expand it or make it loose, the bit. But some of the I'll just go through the ones that some of the things the words that we believe that deserve to be under or deserve to be defined. You know, transportation, because we do believe that it forms a major part in trafficking, and recruitment, which is not defined, gender, sex, in country trafficking, cross border trafficking, quality assurance, and these are some of the ways that we found them as we go with the bill. I didn't really mark as to which section, and performance monitoring, version and recalculation, and we further recommend that the definition of servitude include the following. I quote: means a condition in which the labor or the service of a person are provided or obtained through threat or perceived threat of harm to that person or another person, or through any scheme, plan, or pattern intended to cause the person to believe that if the person does not perform the labor or service in question, that person or another person will suffer physical or psychological harm. Just for clarity, as I said once again, that what we are adding here is not just to limit, nor to make the bill loose and whatnot. And you members of you're much welcome to. We stand corrected. We can pull it back, and as we engage, as we go forward. I'm going to section two. The CTC support the public awareness initiative as stipulated under this chapter. We further encourage the intersectional committee to liaise vehemently with relevant NGOs and faith-based organization in developing public awareness project or support existing program by NGO. And on this case, this will allow and facilitate the dissemination of accurate, clear, updated material to the general public when conducting awareness raising campaign, drawing from the NGO work at grassroots level in both rural and urban areas. We will further recommend that the public awareness program must be enacted within 12 months post the implementation of the bill. Section 3, basically, is some of the things that we welcome, which we were not, and mind you, that we did submit last year, 2009, and we were happy when we looked at the 2009 and the 2010 and see that there's been they have been taken serious, so to speak, if I don't know if that's the right way to use. But yeah, we welcome debt bondage, possession, destruction, confiscation, concealment, temporary documents, using service of victim of trafficking and conducting for sin trafficking purpose. Section 9(1) on liability on carrier. We note that this section, and this is just to highlight on in-country trafficking. This is where we believe that it needs to be squeezed again, if we can, under liability of carrier. We note again that this section refers to cross-border trafficking, does not refer to movement of people within the country. If this is not rectified, we will not be able to prosecute carrier involved in country. So yeah, another angle where we have a taxi driver, so to speak, who is involved with coming with kids from, or with adults from rural areas to town. I mean, what recourse? We don't have that. We're talking about cross-border people who bring thing. Kids or any human from other countries to our country, or from our country to outside. So I think that's under liability of care. I think we can just expand it more to accommodate in-country trafficking. And section 13(1). I think this was covered by Litala Bantu just recently now, but I'll just go through it as well. Quote: if the victim has given his or her reason concerned in the prescribed manner, unquote, active interaction with victim of human trafficking as well as research affirmed that a person that has been trafficked suffer violent and trauma directed at instilling fear. It is therefore highly unlikely or improbable that such a person will submit written consent. It's more than likely that when encountering a victim of trafficking who has been traumatized and abused, the chances of communicating with the victim again slim and potentially dangerous, given that this activity is closely linked to organized crime. We therefore recommend that A, if the victim is given his or her written consent in the prescribed manner, that must be taken out of the bill. We are pleased to see Section 16.2 and 3 has been added. And with the communication that we always have with our member affiliate, there was a case that was brought, I think, on board by not for sale, on where subs, I don't know if they're here, but yeah, where subs are conducting their random searches, and it is one of those cases. I mean, they're saying to just go in and out and do whatever they're doing. So the issue was that the lack of sensitivity, whether it's a question of maybe they're not being workshopped or I don't know, but they go in, run the strip joints, kick out all these women, and then send them to different shelters. And we had one issue from Sarg Development Center where they had women brought on the thing on the shelter, and only to find out later that these women are not trafficked. They're just prostitutes. Coming back to the point that was raised by one of the one of our members, that the abuse of the system by prostitutes. You find that someone is enjoying doing whatever they're doing, and they just want to abuse the system and say that they've been trafficked and whatnot. So I think that's another angle where we need to really communicate and engage each other. Section 20 of the trafficking. Section 20. We recommend that section 20, with reference to the word "may," this is just one of those technicalities. The word "may" be changed to "must." Section 26. We recommend that an accredited organization must, in a prescribed manner, collect information on the victim of trafficking. And section 37. We would like the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development to take cognizance of the fact that the process of applying for compensation as a civil matter is both expensive and lengthy. We recommend that this should be taken into consideration in light of the recovery and reflection period as referred to in Section 17 and 18. Section 34, we recommend that within the heading trafficking, I quote, trafficking of child by parent, guardian, or other person who has parental responsibility and rights in respect of the child, the phrase other, be replaced with caregivers defined within the Child Amendment Act of 2007. Because I don't think that a parent can just give other person. If I don't know what other person means anyway. But I'm just saying that a caregiver, it sounds more. It has a weight. Because you can't just give a stranger your kid. You have to know. You have to have some connection. And obviously, that is not. I'm not limiting that. There are possibilities where I don't know. Where, as we see on Kumbuleka, where women just give strangers their children. I'm saying on Kumbuleka. Okay, thank you. We would like to draw the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development attention to the fact that Section 36 of the proposed bill is leaning heavily towards cross-border trafficking and does not address the country. Again, on Section 36 of the bill, we have noted again that in-country hasn't been addressed. So I think that's where, again, we can just squeeze it in. But as I said, that we are willing to provide another report which is just clear as to how do we, as suggesting to you members of the committee. We want the inclusion of data recording system within the Department of Social Development, South African Development, NPA, and Home Affairs. We therefore question why the Department of Labor is not the mandated to collect data, as the department is key role when dealing with the detection of in-country trafficking for the purpose of labor exploitation. And I think this is when we were in Pretoria, it was answered, and we did explore on it. But again, I had a conversation with women on farms, I think 2 weeks back, and they did raise issues whereby they find that there are people who are brought on farms under false pretense, but they do not have the capacity, they do not have the resources to deal with such issues. I guess another issue is on human trafficking. We need to really expand on that for labor purposes. That people are brought in our country
within either from other countries or within our provinces for labor purposes. And I'll jump to section 39. Section 39, 1A, we recommend that, I quote, Section 39, AB, be amended to read as follows, ensure a uniform, coordinated and cooperative approach by the three spheres of government, that's your national, provincial and local department, organs of state and institutions dealing with matters relating to the trafficking in person. Section 40, recommend that the intersectional committee be established or be duplicated in each and every province. We recommend that the guidance be formulated by the intersectional committee for the establishment of provincial intersectional committee. And section 41, 1B, we recommend that the establishment of the integrated information system must include data from in-country trafficking also. And all this has been dealt with yesterday, and I think there were a couple of questions that were raised why we recommend that the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disability should be added. And we even made recommendations on section 42 and section 43, 1 and 2 and B. And in conclusion, we're grateful for this opportunity to make comments on the prevention and combating of trafficking in person, and trust that this serious consideration will be given to these comments. And that's it. Thank you.
Any more
questions?
Yes, members.
I'm JJ Musa's professor.
Chair, thanks. I think first would be just whether, I mean, you've heard the issue of the problem of statistics, how bad is the problem, whether the counter-trafficking coalition has any form of statistics or documentation as to the nature of the problem in the Western Cape or the Cape Town Metro. I'm not sure the exact area that you're operating in. Then the issue, I wasn't here when the submission was made on a separate chapter on children, but the just really what the motivation is, because the difficulty we're faced with dealing with legislation is to have legislation that is legally certain and legislation that is understood by the public or easy to read. And often you can't do the same. And you then actually, the main priority would be legal certainty. And in terms of making it more understandable to members of the public would be some kind of guide. So that's why you'll find some laws prescribe that guides must be created. So what's the rationale for wanting a chapter on specifically taking all the sections on children and putting them into one chapter? Is it to get to make it easier to read? And if that is the case, if it's going to interfere with sort of legal certainty issues, would it not be sufficient to do it as a guide outside separately? I think that was all. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to say it's really encouraging to see the vibrancy of the civil society and the inputs that we are receiving in general. And it's really exciting to see the level of engagement. And many of these are voluntary organizations, and I think that it is commendable, and we can be very grateful from our side. This is 15 civil society organizations that have come together under this. And some have already made submissions, and we appreciate that. And one of the issues that keep coming up is the in-country trafficking, which seems to be a concern. And one of your colleagues yesterday went into great depth about that. And from our side, we clearly want to make it very clear that there must be exactly the same level of emphasis on in-country trafficking as cross-border trafficking. So we are grateful for the inputs, and you might want to add to that as well on the issue of in-country trafficking. And when it comes to issues of labor, we might well find that it is even greater. It might well labor issues, the in-country trafficking might even be greater than we are aware of, and that therefore that it really needs a lot of attention in this bill. Now, JJ did ask you the issue of Western Cape and your experience of data and maybe anecdotal evidence of what is going on. In the Human Science Research Council's report, they also indicate the issue of gangs having families indebted to them in the Western Cape, and then that, and then using parents in those families are given money to pay debts, for example, and then their children are then trafficked to perform certain functions for those gangs. Is that an issue that has also come up? That has been highlighted as well in that Human Science Research Council, and that is obviously an issue which seems to indicate in-country trafficking is also very large. Another issue which hasn't come up at all is the issue of illegal miners, people that have been trafficked in-country to work in our illegal mines. That's men trafficking. These are some of the broader issues that we also need to look at. But all in all, thank you for the submission, Chair.
We can echo our sentiments on our member of civil society. Prof?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Well done, Trafficking Coalition. But having said that, I do not know whether or not you have noted the incidence or prevalence of women who stand street corners carrying babies and going along with teenagers begging. I'm asking this because there's a rumor from the city where I come from that those women traffic those babies and children from other families for purpose of begging. If you haven't heard of this, please go into that. It's a very, very disturbing phenomenon. Thank you.
In the province where I come from, brainwave. I don't know how to explain what it means. Honorable Khwekani, Honorable Malchas, Honorable Chochela. Let's not discuss it now. Fatello. And then follow in course. We'll discuss that later, and I will express my request.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you know the issue of Ugutwala is coming up strongly on all the presentations since yesterday. And I have a serious concern because it seems as if we as South Africans, we have not engaged on this particular issue, and we have not even engaged our communities. And I don't know whether we are going to start by legislating this issue or we are going to start by engaging the communities, the chiefs and everyone. Sorry, Chief. because we can look at page 6 of the bill, page 6 of the bill, because I think we should also define Ugutwala in English, what does it mean? Because if you look at number J, it says the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to obtain the consent of a person having control or authority over another person. And I don't know whether Ugutwala more or less is that, unless there is more. Yes, because there's an agreement or the parents, and then the other. So I think more or less is Ugutwala wala, this what is said here. And I don't know whether we should, instead of using what is written here, use the word Ugutwala. I'm not sure whether ENGO did take this into consideration. But also, honestly, Chair, my concern is that we have not engaged, you have not engaged South African community on this particular issue, because it only came to most of the people when what happened in Lusikisiki last year came up. And can you protect me, Chair, from the members behind me? So, Chair, but I'm sure that we have not engaged on this in our land. So I don't know whether is it not covered on J, or whether we want it to be here as Ukutwala, or we want to start by legislating it even before we educate our communities, or we engage our communities so that we understand it from the communities that are involved in this. I think if we want to legislate here, we need okay.
Chairperson, I'd like to also present something on section 36. I just want him to clarify himself when it comes to the question of why a Department of Labour is not mandated to collect data. Because if you look at section 36, labour is included everywhere. So I just want a bit of clarification. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like also to have clarity on Ukutwala. We are from different provinces in South Africa. To my way of thinking, I wonder why we take it to be human trafficking, Ukutwala. Because I thought it's a cultural way of doing certain things. But I would like it to let's, can't we go to the traditional leaders and find out exactly what are we saying by Ukutwala? My question is on section 26.1, where the presenter said we recommended that an accredited organization must be in a prescribed manner, and prescribed manner is in capital letters. I would like to get further explanation on this section. What does it really mean? Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you, Chairperson. A simple question arising from paragraph 2.6, where you say the word "other person" should be replaced by "caregiver." Are you not rather restricting the conditions that may be applicable? Doesn't other person also cover caregiver and any other kinds of people that have not been thought of?
Martin, we are yours.
As I said when I begin that our comments, our submission is to all in all this document. What we want is
second much. Sorry, can you switch off?
It's on.
Switch it off.
Oh, okay.
Is Film and Publication Board around? You might present before lunch and you get questioned after lunch. Otherwise, we might have sized you to prepare for after lunch. But the way proceedings are moving, you might present before lunch and then engaged after lunch. Proceed. Meaning that you may immediately come after.
Thank you. As I was saying that, answering Honorable Chief's question on caregiver, if it might not be restrictive or limiting, so to speak, as I was saying that, I was thinking that as a parent, you I don't know, you can't just give other people. I know it's open, but as I'm saying that, what you're saying, it makes sense. makes sense. I mean, there is a possibility in what you say that other person, it's much more open, and the caregiver is restricted, so to speak. So we can still look into that, honestly speaking. I'm seeing it from another angle, and thanks for that. And on the issue of Ukutwala, I think it has been coming a lot, and myself, I do not. I know a little about Ugutwala. So yeah, I think we need a recourse with the traditional leaders. Exactly. And on the other question on section 26, I don't know. Can I allow Julia Carford? She's here to just if she can. Elaborate on section 26, which is one of our member affiliates, and I think this is the point that, yeah, is she in a position to, yes, Julia Garfield, yes, to.
Okay. I think that the recommendation was made in the light of looking at how we're collecting statistics. All departments are stipulated in how information should be collected. So when we made that recommendation, what our intention was that if an organization is collecting information, because you know that often you find they collect information, but it's done very differently. So that when a report is collected, then we've got to go in search of some information. So when we made this recommendation, it is let us put forward a prescribed format, as it were, that is aligned to how government departments possibly are going to collect information, so that when you put your report together, the information is there.
Okay. Let me see. Okay, there was just I think there was just recommendations that were raised more than questions, honestly speaking. So, yeah, I think all in all, we have covered. Yes.
Okay. Can I just update a few? I just want to make a few comments and also just to say that the Cultural Trafficking Coalition is very grateful to William. William has only been in this position, I think, 2 months. So it's very brave just to do this. And it's an intimate the coalition. Just to explain to how the coalition operates, there's organizations working within the sphere of human trafficking. So there's 4 task teams within the coalition. And each task team, there's a task team of research, rapid response, awareness and public education, and advocacy and lobbying. So the coalition currently doesn't sit with information, but the membership organizations does. So when it comes to research, it is also once again a system of organizations. And Sungulova has explained in terms of their research, Alex has their research, and what we will do for this committee is ask membership organizations that sits with information to find it.
Mr. Chairman, you are incredibly generous today. I thank you for this later question. I'm sorry, I'm asking things that bother me, so I wish no one to take offense. I ask things because I don't have answers and I want to test certain parameters. And I would like to, if I can ask a question and then a follow-up, just a yes or no answer. Will your organization be one of the organizations contemplated in Section 20? Is there a likelihood of that? Both your organization and all the members of your organization, with the exception of the Equality Commission. Okay, then I will proceed on the assumption that you will. Because, I assume, Mr. Chairman, that all the presenters today and yesterday, with the exception of the organ of states, is the body which will participate in the implementation of this act, in terms they will qualify, because of the expertise which brought them here, they were qualified to be amongst one of the accredited organizations in terms of Section 20, which I think will receive the support of the state to carry out the functions which are expected of them in terms of the Act. There is a sort of a privatization of the functions to the NGO communities, which is accredited by means of this. So the difficulty I have, and again I'm putting it forward to be told that perhaps I'm wrong, that we are receiving presentation from NGOs which almost have an interest in giving us a nature of the problem which may be more dramatic than it is, so that this legislation can go forward and they may become part of the mechanism of which implements it and have the relevant resources. I just had a difficulty with your secretary, Mr. Chairman, because I also wanted to have in these hearings experts in migrations who have no interest, people who would represent and I gave some names of law firms and immigration practitioners, but I think we also need to supplement our investigation on the facts of the matter through that type of expertise and then perhaps bring some of these victims of trafficking before us that we can interrogate directly their plight and the need they have for this legislation.
I think the committee needs can deal with it internally, because what status of people who present who are supposed to be here or not, I think that must be an internal principle issue discussed within the committee. Because since I was born, I'm looking for something called neutral and less interested. It's a very difficult thing to find. But sometimes we impose that neutrality for purpose of achieving particular objectives in an acceptable way sometimes. I think before we proceed to films, the other issue I want to throw to the committee and those who are presenting is that, you know, the other problem around Ugutwala which can actually confuse us a lot is that every time we talk about Ugutwala, there's this presupposition that it is always a woman who has got no say, the young man has a say. Those of us who grew in these communities, you will find that both these two youngsters, this issue may not, both of them may not necessarily be what you call be involved in it. So an assumption that when there is a Utwala, it's a woman who is being twalat to Inanziga may not be perfectly what to call correct. That's why it's not a simple issue to deal with. It needs cultural what to call engagement. That's why sometimes one is can be persuaded by one presenter who said, let a different bill probably look at it. Because if you look at it the way people seem to look at it now, generally it's a convention all over the world that when men and women are getting married, a woman goes to the, not because it's a legal requirement, but it's the way it has been practiced. Women always go to the home of the man. In this instance, you will be surprised to find that a number of instances of Ugutwala, none of the two necessarily had a what to call a concern. But because of the convention that when they are married, the woman will go to a man's land. So it is not as simple. There are elements of inequality. That's why sometimes it's important to say, is it wise to criminalize a cultural reference or to deal with it when it finds itself on the wrong side of the law rather than upfront criminalizing it? That's why it's important to discuss it more deeper than the simplistic way we look at it now. Yes, ma'am. All right, with those.
No, I'm sure I understand you, but you see the issue here is the fact that, like Honorable Kiki was saying, maybe we should interpret the word Ugutwala in English. That is where the problem. problem actually comes from, because being toilet is not something good. And in this case, the female is being toilet and not the male. I hear your view that both parties may not be in agreement, but the fact that the female in this case is the person who's being toilet. And we just say Ugutwala, but I'm sure most of us don't understand what it really means to toil is. Is to really grab something by force. Umthwala umuntu umyise la engafuni ukuba khona. But I feel that we should get better
deep down about it.
And then also, I still maintain that we should also get the definition of ubukhoma, because in this instance, it's usually older men covering younger girls. Thank you.
I'm worried about the... What I refuse to accept is to equate yourselves to my right to facilitate. I don't want to share my facilitator role with you. That's why I'm not going to allow you, Ndate Joe, to speak. I want the next team to present. That's why I'm not going to allow, because I'll end up sharing this facilitation with you. And I want to claim this power. It belongs to me as I sit here. Because I'm not closing the topic. I'm just sensitizing ourselves about this complexity so that we can discuss it further. Yeah. How smart you are, you may finish your presentation before 12:50. Everything. You're saying how smart you are. And film people are usually very smart. Yeah.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is reflected there is Dumisani Khokwana. I'm the manager of legal affairs in the Khokwana. Yes. No, Khokwana. And the literal translation of that is, as you say in Chief Patekile, a small hoho. Yes. That is saying it very literally. I have with me my colleague, Mrs. Goodness Zulu, who is the manager in the Child Protection Unit of the Film and Publication Board. We and Deborah Mobilin, who is our parliamentary liaison office, in our Cape Town office. Yeah, there she is. Yeah. Yeah. She is Deborah Mobilin. Yeah, she's our parliamentary liaison officer. Yeah. We are supported by the Department of Home Affairs. The gentleman sitting behind me is Bayanda Mzoneli. He's the media liaison office for the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Honorable Malusi Gigaba. We are a... We'll tell you that just now. We are... What? Okay. We are a public entity, a very small public entity under the Department of Home Affairs, Schedule 3 public entity. Our main mandate is to regulate the distribution of films and games, as well as certain publications, to provide consumer advice to the members of the public, to protect children from exposure to disturbing and harmful material, and from premature exposure to adult experiences. We are also responsible for making use of children in and exposure to pornography punishable. That is generally the main mandate of the Film and Publication Board. We deal mainly with films, or we do our regulation mainly through a process called classification. we do our regulation through a process called classification as well as compliance monitoring. Classification is nothing else but allocation of age ratings in all films that are distributed in South Africa. You have major distributors like your New Metro and any other registered film distributor who are supposed to submit all films to the Film and Publication Board for classification. Simply speaking, classification is getting the age appropriateness in films, right? We have guidelines that our classifiers or examiners are using. These guidelines are researched. They represent the views of the communities out there. The main purpose of classification really is to isolate films that we are of the view that may have negative psychological and developmental effects on people of certain ages. We're talking children, we're talking generally also sensitive adults as well. And we also provide consumer advice on the content of the films. Just to just go a little bit further on the classification, we have guidelines that really deal with identify, classify the elements, issues like sex, your violence, and so on, and nudity in films. And then our classifiers, they apply those guidelines when they classify the films, and also just give consumer advice to people who might want to hire those films or buy those films to say this film contains this and that type of content. And we're talking here different kinds of content. And when it comes to sexual content, we're talking explicit sexual content, stuff that may be classified X 18 to be viewed only for people who are over the age of 18, and etc. We also do have a compliance monitoring function. We have compliance monitors who go around the country and look at distributors to ensure that they do comply with the Film and Publications Act. All distributors of films, regardless of film format, are required to register with the Film and Publication Board and submit all films. So we follow them up and make sure that they do follow the law. We are moving into digital distribution of films over the internet. This is a new phenomenon for South Africa, but it's not for other parts of the world. Films are increasingly being distributed no longer from your Mr. Video or from your Pick and Pay, but over the internet. So we are also looking at regulating that kind of space when it comes to films. This is generally just an explanation of what a classification is. I think categories that are relevant for what we talk about today would be your X18 films that are classified X18 that contain explicit sexual content, and films that are classified XX, that is films that contain scenes of child pornography, violent sexual conduct, bestiality, incest, etc. We are of the view that there is quite a lot of sexual exploitation that occurs during the production of these films, particularly the XX category. And we see that there might be a link between the sexual exploitation and trafficking in persons. It is just one of the consequences of what this bill is seeking to proscribe. We are looking at sensitizing the classifiers on issues that the trafficking bill is seeking to deal with. But there is a very strong link between the production of explicit sexual content in films, as well as people who might be brought into the country or maybe inter-country trafficking for the purpose of producing XX category films or X18 category films. The Film and Publication Act has sexual exploitation as one of the consequences of what happens when child pornography is being produced. And we see a synergy in terms of the definition of sexual exploitation in the Sexual Offences Act as well as in the trafficking bill. We are generally concerned about trafficking of women and children for the purpose of producing pornographic films. I must say that we have not done any study to indicate that there is a link in distribution of films as with trafficking of women and maybe children. But however, somebody has challenged us to really prove that there isn't a link. Therefore, it seems like an issue that we may have to really look at in the near future. We also view that all these legislations, this bill that we talk about today, the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, as well as the Film and Publication Board, have one objective in mind: to deal with sexual exploitation. We may be talking about child pornography, we may be talking about pornography, but behind all those images, there is a living human being in some instances. And the provisions that really deal with sexual exploitation in all this legislation are really looking at trying to combat the use of children and women in the production of films for financial gain. So there is a common objective in what the Film and Publication Board is trying to do, and the objective of this bill, as well as the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act. We have a few proposals or recommendations to make on the bill, starting with the definition. We have looked at the definition of exploitation in this bill. We are of the view that that definition ought to be expanded to not only provide for removal of body parts, but also for sale thereof. We also see this as a consequence in some instances of trafficking in persons, as well as illegal adoption. It's also one of the manifestations of this phenomenon of child of trafficking. So we also view that there ought to be included in the definition sale of body parts, as well as illegal adoption. Also, on the definition of forced labor, we are proposing a child-friendly definition of forced labor, which is informed by the International Convention on Worst Forms of Labor. We have looked at the definition, even though in some instances it does cover what we have in mind, but we are of the view that when it comes to children, if we can adopt these three proposals that we have here on the definition, include them on the definition, then it would cover forced labor when it comes to children. A, all forms of slavery or practices similar to slavery, such as sale and trafficking of children, debt bondage, forced and compulsory labor. We are mindful of the fact that the bill already provides for some of these factors here, particularly debt bondage, but we also view that the definition ought to be extended so that it would be more child-friendly than it looks right now. B, commercial sexual exploitation of children. You may say that is also, it may be read into sexual exploitation. You know, commercial sexual exploitation and sexual exploitation, what then is the difference? But we also view that we ought to make a specific mention of commercial sexual exploitation of children. Involvement of children in other illicit activities, such as drug trafficking. We know that children are more often than not used in the sale of drugs. Children may be trafficked to different areas of the country to be used as pawns in the sale of drugs. All right. In a trafficking definition, we, instead of making a proposal for a specific chapter on child trafficking, we propose that maybe the definition of child trafficking be extended, because we are of the view that when it comes to people under the age of 18 years,
some of the factors that are contained in the definition of child protection, for example, a threat to harm, be a threat of or use of force, intimidation, or other forms of coercion, may not necessarily have to be proven in order for you to, in order for children to be trafficked. Children are vulnerable. Children care may be trafficked without necessarily using any of the factors that are contained in the definition of trafficking. Therefore, we are of the view that we should not make it very difficult for our courts to prove that children have been trafficked. It should be enough for prosecutors to prove that children have been moved from their ordinary area of residence to another area, for as long as the other consequences, like sexual exploitation, forced labor, and so on, are existent. It should not be necessary to prove that children have been moved from where they stay into another area through use of threat of harm or threat or use of force as contained in the definition currently. Because this may be difficult for children to supply enough evidence in court that they have been threatened. We know the difficulties that we currently experience with children having to give evidence in cases where they have been sexually exploited, where government has got to go further and provide extensive means to make a child comfortable to be able to give evidence of sexual exposure and other difficulties related thereto. So we're saying we should make it easy in this bill to prove that a child has been trafficked, and we go with the definition of a child as it is contained in the constitution and any other legislation as any person who is under the age of 18 years. And then on section 3, I think where everybody else who presented here spoke of a clause, we are speaking of a section. So section 3 is the same thing as clause 3. We are proposing an extension of that public awareness heading there, or subheading, to say public awareness and education, because the spirit of this bill is not only to punish people who are engaged in the illegal activity of trafficking, but also to empower the communities and other people who may have to deal with this phenomenon. Section 3, subsection 1, we are proposing an addition after awareness to say establish public awareness and educational programs. And then if you continue reading that section, after for the prevention, and then you add prevention, protection, and suppression. Prevention, for the prevention, protection, and suppression, and combating of trafficking in persons. Because we are of the view that we also need to protect the victims, or not only the victims, but also the members of the public at large, through this public awareness and education campaign. Section 3, subsection 1, A, after especially, we include especially women and children and other vulnerable groups, and those who are vulnerable or at risk of becoming victims of trafficking. Okay. We are just proposing the addition of just those, especially women and children and other vulnerable groups, because we are of a view that the main spirit or the concept of the bill is really to protect women and children as well as other vulnerable groups. So we want that to be quite explicit or specific in the section that deals with public awareness and education campaigns. Okay, section 3, section 1, A, Roman figure 4.
after agencies, and then you agencies and victim support services that may be approached for assistance or information. You know, people also do not only need to be informed about the institutions or law enforcement agencies that may help them, but also about the victim support services that are available in the country generally. Okay. Still on Section 3, then we propose a new subsection altogether, which may be D, just below C there, to inform and educate law enforcement, social welfare, health, education, labor, immigration, border control, home affairs, justice, trade, municipal officials. Really, that list is not closed there, but I think the idea there is that the public awareness campaigns and education should not only be limited to victims. It should also extend to public officials who have to deal with this phenomenon. For instance, we accept that this is a relatively new phenomenon that is not known. We are dealing today with a bill that is aimed at criminalizing this phenomenon. Therefore, law enforcement officials and everybody else who has to come across, you know, situations of trafficking have to be informed, not only just the victims and the members of the public. And we accept that currently, as we are in South Africa, there may be very limited education and awareness campaigns towards our very own public officials who may be at immigration, who may be at law enforcement, who may be responsible for prosecuting, you know, perpetrators of child trafficking. Therefore, the public awareness and information campaigns have to be extended to them as well. Yeah, all right. And Section 8.2 is generally just a comment, not a recommendation for a new provision, but just to make a comment that we welcome and note the synergy between the provision, Section 8, Subsection 2, that relates to ISPs in this bill, as well as in the Film and Publication Act, because we have said that one of the mandates of the Film and Publication Act is to make sure that we punish the use of children in pornography. Of late, we are seeing quite a lot of, in fact, it's not even a new thing, it has been happening all over, that internet is being used quite often, you know, through sexual exploitation of children and so on. And we note the fact that in terms of this bill, that is criminalized should any ISP be found to have been hosting information that relates to trafficking, then that becomes a criminal offense. It is in the same spirit as it is in the Film and Publication Act, that if anyone is found to be hosting or to be involved in activities that relate to child abuse over the internet, then that is a criminal offense. So that is a welcome provision in this bill as well. Recently, we held a symposium in Cape Town, which called for a total ban on distribution of pornography, to be specific, over the internet. So we see a link in this provision. Right. Okay. All right. That was just, by the way, a kind of a comment. And then in conclusion, let's just go back to the previous slide. Right. In conclusion, the Film and Publication Board welcomes and supports really the overall intent and purport of the bill, especially, you know, the victim rehabilitation approach that the bill takes. We have the view that the bill does not only look at the criminalizing and punishing as child trafficking. It's quite a welcome a new approach to our criminal justice system, which is adversarial in nature, but we are looking now at the issues or the provisions relating to compensation of victims. It's quite a welcome provision in the bill. Thank you.
Comments? Questions by members? From this side. All of my class in course. Did I see a hand here? Look. Honorable Swartz, and we close. Any other question will come after lunch.
Thanks, Chairperson, because I'm still getting to terms with the name Hohana, a small Hoha. Thank you. What I want to ask, you know, I was looking at section 3, yeah, 1D, where you speak about the additional clause when it comes to education. One question I want to ask there, because you mentioned the departments, and we know when it comes to social welfare, social development, you know, they speak to shelters too. Now, I would like to know from you, how we fit in human settlement, you know, the housing, because these victims will perhaps be entitled to housing too. Because yesterday the chairperson mentioned when it comes to the Domestic Violence Act, you know, that the human settlement also plays a very important role when it comes to these victims. I just want to hear your thoughts on it. Thank you.
Very circumspect. I hope everybody will follow you.
Yes, I will be circumspect. I think Jefferson, Mr. Khokhwana, has made a mistake by including the word protection. The suggested amendment to subsection 3.1, where you say after prevention you must include protection. Because what are we protecting there? The aim of that clause is about preventing and suppressing and combating trafficking. Now if you are going to include protection, that means you are contradicting what the clause is actually saying.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to ask Mr. Khokhwana about a mixed, because I suspect it's a new way of child trafficking, because the two mixed children are just called from home, follow the stranger wherever the stranger is, and at the end of the day they get killed. So I think it is very important that it is included as well here.
Yes, Chair, that previous question ties into the new electronic field and technology that we're faced with, and the area which you raise of trafficking of women and children for pornographic films and through the internet is a key aspect. Just the issue of the support for the provision in the bill that relates to the revoking of a license of an internet service provider. No other act does that, is that correct? And I obviously we support that provision in the view of the fact of the role that internet service providers can play in promoting unconsciously as a conduit of information. So would you just comment on that further? Thank you.
Honourable Brad Daly.
This also connect to the question asked earlier about the environment and so on, the cause, effect and so on. Now, I was not aware actually that from the side of Kampala, I don't know if all of us were aware, at least there are people who are doing something. I mean, the point is that we are all ultimately definitely what we are taught to be. Not just formally at school, socialized, what we see on TV, indoctrinated. You see, TV has gone to the rural area, and because we've got electricity, and we are seeing all these films, crime is going to be there because on that TV we're also exploiting crime. Now, I mentioned this one because when you are saying to society, don't do 1, 2, 3, the society is also bombarded with a heavy indoctrination from these images on TV. And so you think children are studying and they are watching these things in their bedroom, they are closing their door. Now, the question is, how far is it extended? Is it there at SABC, this type of thing? Because the main films that people see, the other things becomes black guns, it becomes high life, riches, and it becomes sex. And ordinary peasant and workers think, who am I not to live this type of life? I just want to know what is the impact is SABC also subjected to all this? Thanks, Chair.
I like the way you pity peasants. you've got only 5 minutes.
I will leave the last three questions, and then my colleague Goodness is going to deal with the first two questions about human settlement and the protection. About SABC, we are currently our act does not cover broadcasters in as far as making them obliged to use our classification decisions. They claim to have their own classification committees and so on who decide on the age rating. However, because they are obliged to follow a code which is administered by the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa, there is a clause there which is something that is maybe very close to what you are looking for. There is a clause that says they may, again we're seeing the word may in code of conduct and also in our law, it says they may use the film and publication board classification if that particular film they want to broadcast was classified by the FPB. It's not a peremptory provision, but it's an option to them to say, okay, we may use this, but they are not obliged. But I think that the most important thing to note is that they are not, we do not regulate them. We do not regulate the broadcasters. We just regulate the other distributors of film, the physical distribution, and we also are now getting into the digital distribution of films through the internet, video on demand, and all those issues. So that is another loophole in the law you may want to take note of. Pornographic films, ISPs, revoking of licenses. There is no other law that provides for revoking of licenses. Licenses that are granted to the ISPs by ICASA. There's no other law. The only law that comes close to that is the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. But it only just says they must apply to the Minister of Communications to become recognized members and so on. But we have engagements with them to say, look, this distribution of films is becoming a problem. Distribution of films over the internet is becoming a problem. What is it that we can do? Okay, what is it that we can do to look at? But the Film and Publication Act and the proposed bill to totally ban pornography over the internet is the only laws currently in the country that come close to making sure that there isn't a distribution. Of course, there's been allegations that Mixit is another form of, you know, and I think this provision in terms of this act is really trying to trying to deal with that. Okay. Goodness will deal with the two first questions.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the questions that you've posed to us. I might not have the expertise to deal with the first question in particular, the human settlement, but I do believe that the bill seeks to ensure that once you are a victim of trafficking, the child belongs in terms of the services that will be provided, as it is stipulated in the bill that you shall be, you know, have access to health, education, and so on. So in terms of the interdepartmental collaboration, those determinations would actually be done by relevant departments to say whether this person is retained in the not in South Africa, if it's somebody from outside South Africa and such service, and such services, they have qualification to access such services. The second question really related to the issue of the additional protection there. I think it's about an angle and a perspective from where we're coming from. Because we're talking about prevention, we call it protection. We feel that, yes, prevention in terms of awareness and all that, preventing the act, but once it has happened, we need to protect the victim. So it is more victim-oriented that we're looking at this angle. And I must say, we've worked with other organizations such as Mole Songololo, even last year when we dealt with this bill, and there was a consensus that this needs to really come out very clearly in the bill. And I just want to also mention, just as a last bit, to say that when we deal with the public awareness, or rather awareness programs, child pornography, the whole issue of children being able to protect themselves, because more and more the traffickers are now using the internet. So our prevention programs are really looking at integrating issues of child trafficking, because we educate children, for instance, to say, don't allow yourself to a face-to-face meeting with someone in the cyber space, because more and more the internet services are now used by traffickers to procure children and women in particular. Thank you.
I think we must thank Sushnat Ili Talabad for making it possible that we are at this stage, at the point where we are now. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So I hope everybody will read from Ili Talabad that big things can be done in a short space of time. And I think everybody has tried, but our capacity is not the same. But you set a good example, Ulilita, in the true sense of the word. So this is where we end, all the members. We go for lunch. Wherever you went yesterday. And then we are going to meet here. We're going to meet here at 2 o'clock. Don't think I'm excited about what I'm saying, but I'm stating the objective situation, not because I celebrate it. And we hope we will deal with this discomfort in future. Thank you very much. Let's meet at 2.